Welcome to the Undivided Podcast, brought to you by 1530 Mortgage. I'm Brandi Cruz. Busy podcast for you today, but also I want to try to end on a lighter note, try to keep it. It's Friday, right? I don't want to send you into the weekend on an angry note. So I'm going to try to get most of my ranting out of the way ahead of time. I have a rant about tangentially tied to the January 6th committee hearings. Also, we are going to systematically destroy all of the arguments made in a quote-unquote report that landed moderate Republicans on a list of people with ties to far-right extremism. So we're going to break that down. Also, I'm debuting two new segments that will be every Friday on Undivided. Friday with Friends, where I bring in an interesting friend of mine to talk about politics and other things. So I'll have a guest shortly. And we're introducing Florida Report. I couldn't think of a state. We do this podcast out of Washington State. Couldn't think of a state more different than Washington. And we do a lot of Washington-centric stories because I think that's most of where our viewers are from. But, you know, I thought it can get a little redundant to continue to focus on Washington. So why not have a weekly report on the happenings in Florida? So I'll be introducing our Florida-based correspondent for our weekly segment, Florida Reports. But first, as I said, I want to talk about a little bit of a rant on the January 6th committee hearings. I have said repeatedly what I feel about January 6th. I have said repeatedly how I feel about the former president, Donald Trump. I don't feel the need to get on every single week and reiterate to you how I feel about those things. But since the January 6th committee hearings have begun, there have been people on my social media saying, oh, I see you're just ignoring the January 6th committee hearings. I see you haven't said anything about it today. This isn't a breaking news show, okay? This is a show where I give my opinion. You guys know that. And if you've watched this, I don't think you're the ones complaining. You get these people who don't even listen to the podcast, don't watch the show, and they're on Twitter and, you know, they're probably far left, and they're like, oh, I see you're ignoring the January 6th insurrection. When in reality, I've talked about it before. Like I said, not a breaking news show. It's a show where I give my opinion. My opinion on January 6th is clear. And I feel like it was embarrassing for America. I feel like it was bad. And there's really nothing I'm going to learn in the January 6th committee hearings that's going to change my mind on that. And so I don't feel the need every single episode to come back on and, again, reiterate how I feel about January 6th. But I wonder, if something got me wondering this week, why these people even care? If I give them my opinion on January 6th and Trump, and I let them know that I think, you know, Trump was not fit to be president and January 6th was a national disgrace, is it going to somehow change their opinion of me? The answer to that is no. These are people who view me as right wing, even though I'm not. These responses come after stories that I do that are negative toward Democrats. So they're like, well, what about January 6th? And it's like, okay. And so even if I respond and I say, well, yeah, I think January 6th was horrible, it's not going to change their opinion of me. They're trying to use it as a distraction. For instance, I posted on Twitter a clip from our Wednesday show of Democratic political consultant Sandeep Kashuk criticizing Team Biden on their tone-deaf tweets about the economy. And someone responded, I'm not going to put their name out there, but it's just a random Twitter account. Am I missing the tweets or are you basically ignoring the J6 hearings? I responded and said, I talked about them on the podcast last week and mentioned them yesterday on the podcast. This isn't someone who actually wants to know my opinion on January 6th or the J6 hearings. They just want to try to point out or try to win some sort of argument that doesn't exist about the fact that they perceive that people on the right are ignoring the January 6th hearings. And that couldn't be further from the truth. I'm just not going to talk about it every single day because I think there are more important things going on and I don't believe I'm going to learn anything from those hearings that's going to change my perspective about what happened. Now, there was an interesting show I watched, interesting show, that just cemented my belief about how Democrats view people who they perceive to be on the right when it comes to January 6th. So have you heard of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee? Samantha Bee, I think she used to be on like The Daily Show or something, and then she got her own show called Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. Now, I had never watched it until last night, but when I'm watching TV at night, usually garbage TV, I'll always see promos for Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. And from a TV background, you put your best stuff in the promos. Like, you want the promo to be what captures the audience to get them to watch your show. I have never found one of these promos funny. In fact, I always find myself sitting there being like, that wasn't funny at all. Isn't this supposed to be a comedy show? I've never laughed at anything Samantha Bee has said. And it's not because I don't agree with her politically. I mean, I think Trevor Noah says some funny stuff. I think SNL has some funny skits. But I just don't find Samantha Bee to be funny. But I was like, you know what? I was just dozing off. I was like, let me watch an episode of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. Let me just see if I'm wrong about her. Because I can laugh at things even if they poke fun at people who I agree with or whatever. So started watching the show, realized pretty quickly it's less of a comedy show and more of just a political show. She's clearly very progressive, and that's fine. She has her show. She can talk about what she wants on her show. I think it's intended to be a comedy show. It's just not funny. And you can feel free to disagree with me. I did not laugh once, and several parts were very awkward. But she talked about the January 6th committee hearings. Namely, she said a couple things about Liz Cheney, the Republican co-chair of this committee, that really struck me. Listen.
I know it's weird that a staunch Republican like Liz Cheney is there, but try to think of it as an X2 X-Men United situation where we're teaming up with villains to stop even worse villains.
Teaming up with villains. Liz Cheney, someone who I have a great deal of respect for. I know there are people who watch who don't like Liz Cheney because she spoke out against Donald Trump. But I've said on the podcast before, would you rather have a Kevin McCarthy or Lindsey Graham who talk shit behind Trump's back and then came out publicly and totally changed their tune and said one thing to one audience, one thing to another? No, someone like Liz Cheney who stood by her moral compass and has suffered greatly politically because of it. I think you have to respect that. And so I guess I was of the belief that Democrats and progressives respected Liz Cheney. They respected her willingness to denounce January 6th, to denounce the former president, to be part of the January 6th committee hearings, and that even if she was from a different political party, they respected what she was doing. But no, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. In the eyes of the other party, Liz Cheney is still a villain.
Try to think of it as an X2 X-Men United situation where we're teaming up with villains to stop even worse villains.
This is what happens when we're consumed by politics. When we look at politics before we look at the person. Liz Cheney has sacrificed so much by taking a moral stand. But again, in the eyes of the left, that's convenient for them. But she is still a villain.
Over multiple months, Donald Trump oversaw and coordinated a sophisticated 7-part plan to overturn the presidential election and prevent the transfer of presidential power.
And let's just ponder for a moment how evil you need to be to shock someone who grew up with Dick Cheney for a father.
It's so predictable to me. And honestly, it's so infuriating. You might say, oh, this is supposed to be a comedy show. Take it easy. No, it's not a comedy show. First of all, it's a political show. And all Samantha Bee is doing is revealing exactly how Democrats think of any Republican, whether it's an anti-Trump Republican or a pro-Trump Republican. They don't like you. They think you're evil. And I keep going back to how much Liz Cheney has personally and politically sacrificed to take a moral stand. Again, whether you agree with her stand or not, you can't deny that she has taken a consistent stand on this issue. And I think that's admirable. I think we need more of that in politics. But at the end of the day, when all this January 6th stuff is done and the committee hearings are over and, you know, the midterms happen and this is somehow behind us, I don't know if that'll ever happen, Democrats aren't going to be fans of Liz Cheney. They're not going to respect Liz Cheney. To them, she's still going to be just another evil Republican. All right, today we're launching a new weekly segment, Fridays with Friends on the Undivided Podcast, where I bring in one of my interesting friends and talk politics and media and whatever else. My friend Dori Monson joins us today. Hello. Are we
How long
friends?
Have you been doing Fridays with Friends?
This is my first one from the new studio. We're launching all these new segments. So I am doing...
So this is your first Fridays with Friends?
So you're my first friend.
Okay, then I feel good about it.
So you were about to be offended if I'd been doing it for like 6 months.
If this
months.
Was your eighth Friday with Friends, I would have been really, really sad.
That's the thing. Seventh would have been fine, sixth, but eighth would have been too much.
Exactly, that's the cutoff, yes.
No, it's my first Friday with Friends, and you're my very first friend.
Ah.
I mean, I'm assuming you agree with that characterization that we're friends.
Much with that.
Oh, good. Even though the internet would very much like me not to be friends with you.
You know what? I've discovered something really interesting about all of that. Sometimes the internet has jerks.
You don't say.
That's what I've discovered. That's what I've discovered over the years. Yes.
I knew you were insightful.
Yeah,
Thank you for
I try
that
to
wisdom.
Find stuff you're not going to hear anywhere else.
Can I ask you about, you know, I think it's fair to say there's been some in the media who haven't treated you very well over the last couple of years. There was a really nice article that came out about you a couple days ago. The headline of it is by Barrett Sports Media. The headline, How Dory Monson Built a Radio Career and Success at Cairo. And it actually focuses on you as a human being as opposed to just your political beliefs. How'd this article come about?
I have absolutely no idea. Barrett Sports Media has expanded to Barrett News Media. So it's a daily national profiles that come out and stories about both the news talk and the sports talk media. And this guy called. He's from Milwaukee. I have no idea how he knows about me. I forgot to ask him why he wanted to do this profile, but it turned out very soon. Because I'm always a little wary about this sort of thing. The Seattle Weekly did a very nice cover story about me a few years ago, and I was very nervous because I thought it was going to be a hit job. But you know, as you know, when people actually talk to me and they don't just hear what they hear on the radio, they understand that we have a life beyond our opinions. And, you know, I know the kind of nonsense you have to put up with now. And, you know, anybody who knows you personally feels about you the way that I do. We just love you. But too many people want to just shove things into an ideological caricature, which is really unfortunate.
I say the same thing. And you're still, after it's been, 8 years since I left Cairo Radio. For people who aren't familiar, that was my first job in news. And so I was on your show and did reporting for Cairo Radio. This was like 10 years ago. So that's how we became friends. But since then, you are still the most common person I'm asked about to this day. In fact, yes. I was at an event a couple days ago and everybody's like fangirling, not because of me, but because I filled in on your show. So I was like, but the first thing I always say when they're like, oh, what's Dory like? I'm like, if you talk to him, he wouldn't even bring up politics. He'd bring up his daughters and his wife. And that's what this article gets to, is just your love of family and how important family is to you. And I love it because, like you said, it's not about this ideological bubble that they're trying to shove you into. It's about who you are as a human being.
And there are a lot of people who their politics is their life. And I really feel sorry for them. I truly believe that I would go nuts. Everything I talk about on the radio, I 100% sincerely believe, I mean, we wouldn't get the kind of listeners we have if there was any phoniness involved. I believe it, but I would go crazy if that's all I thought about. And, you know, I get, there's are a couple people, and they send me hate emails at 8 p.m. and at 3 a.m. and at 7 a.m. And I feel so sorry for them. Now, I mean, just the fact that around the clock, they are obsessed with disagreeing with me about issues. And I really do feel bad for people like that. And that's why I choose not to live my life like that. I'm passionate. I spend 12 hours a day preparing and performing the radio show, but I have to have some time where I'm thinking about other stuff, or else we're all gonna go nuts.
Well, yeah, and you're right. I mean, you'll see people on Facebook who they hate what you're talking about, but they're always there. And it's like, why, if you hate it so much, why are you soaking in it? It's very confusing to me.
Right.
I agree. It's really sad. But in case there's anybody watching this who isn't familiar with you and your show and your career, just give a brief, and I'm assuming most people will be, but brief explainer about what your show is about. And the ratings are really off the charts right now, right?
Yeah, they're crazy. Yeah, I've 27 years, and they're the highest by far. I mean, we've been really good for 26 years, but for the last year and a half, it's been just amazing. The show's about my, I really consider every listener individual friend. And the show's about what I would talk about with my friends if I was talking politics. So I spend, you know, probably 6 to 9 hours finding interesting stuff, stuff that interests me. And then I just try to find entertaining or unique ways to tell those stories. And, you know, my viewpoint, I think I said this to you a couple of weeks ago, because people say, you know, you're conservative, you're libertarian. And in fact, I did say it to you. No, I'm a Doritarian, which all it means is I look at every story, I give my honest opinion on it. And sometimes it's not going to fit a box. It's not going to, you know, because I think people who identify as conservative, they see some news story and they say, okay, I have to put this in my conservative box and now I'm going to make my opinion fit that. And that's not a way to be sincere. That's not a way to be authentic with people. So I just give my opinion, and I don't care which box it falls in. Sometimes, once in a while, it even falls in my liberal box.
Oh, you have a liberal box?
Oh, yeah. It's tidy, but I have it. It's the one I keep a dime in. The other one's the one I can keep bricks in. But yes, yeah.
Well, and your show has always been branded as a watchdog of government. And given what we've gone through in the last 2 years with the pandemic and, you know, government overreach, do you think that's why it's doing so well right now? Or what do you attribute that to?
I think that we are in a time where people are very, very frustrated, especially after the last couple of years. They didn't like being ordered to wear masks. I mean, just on Friday, just today as we record this, the CDC says they are approving injections for 5-year-olds and under. And there are an awful lot of people who think that that's nuts. I happen to be one of them. I'm not anti-vax in the slightest. I'm boosted. I think it's crazy to inject stuff into 3-year-olds. If you have a 3-year-old, and they have made it to, you know, mid-June of 2022, and they're fine, why in the world would somebody inject them at this point? So I say stuff like that that I think an awful lot of people think and feel and believe, and they see in the media elsewhere people who have shaped their opinion because too many people say that they have to be pro-vax. I'm pro-vax if it makes sense for you. In my age group, I'm pro-vax. For a 3-year-old, I'm anti. And so, you know, maybe that's even a slight little nuance that I don't just have, you know, one opinion about this vaccine. I have one opinion about vaccines for me, and I have another opinion about vaccines for kids. I think it's that approach, because there are a lot of people who just are not. And you happen to be, along with me, you know, our friend Jason Rand, we're all voices of, I think, common sense right now. And it's because we don't try to just fit a liberal narrative, because that's and we're seeing in America, and certainly we're going to see it here in Washington, that that narrative that the rest of the media is carrying the water for, it's been a disaster for the last year and a half, and it's going to be a disaster in November too.
Yeah, and I, you know, we all talk, you mentioned Jason, you and I, we do a lot of media criticism. You know, I'm really not very far removed from the mainstream media. You still, would you consider, I mean, you work for a corporation. When you talked, you know, about all those things you kind of raised red flags about during the pandemic and questioned, did you feel constricted at all in that environment to, you know, limit kind of what you were able to say or what you did say about it?
I feel much more the way you are feeling right now, where you are an independent journalist. I have great management, and I have not said that over the years. And people know that I don't say that if I don't mean it, because a few years ago, my life was miserable professionally because I had managers who just disagreed with my opinion. But they don't mess with me. They let me go. They know that I take what I do very seriously. They know that they cannot push me to work any harder than I push myself. And they recognize that I have earned enough free rein. I'm never going to abuse it. I'm never going to say things that are going to get, well, I guess maybe sometimes I say things that get the company upset. They got a little upset with me a couple of years ago. But even with that, you know, this new set of managers since then, they just give me free rein. So I feel far more independent than corporate because I just don't really have to answer to anybody. I'm responsible to people, but they're really cool about not managing me in any kind of micro sense.
Yeah. And this is Friday with Friends, and so it's really about kind of having a casual conversation.
The first ever Friday with Friends.
Which means you're my bestest friend. But there, so I don't want to like dive too much into issues. There's one issue I want you to weigh in on before you go. Yeah. So I'm not going to say what event it was because I don't want to like put all of them into a box. But I was speaking at an event the other day that was
really?
Conservatives
Which one?
In the audience. Stop. Conservatives in the audience. And I got booed. Okay. I've never been booed before. And it wasn't booed by everyone. It was booed by a handful of people. And it's because the topic was elections. And, you know, this is top of mind right now. We're going, the January 6th committee hearings are happening. There's a lot of talk about Trump and the claim of stolen elections. And what I told the crowd is, look, I don't believe that it benefits Republicans to continue to beat the drum on the issue of a stolen election. I think it dissuades Republicans from turning their ballots in. I said, I think there are reasonable issues, you know, with we need to make sure that ballots are secure and there aren't opportunities for fraud, but I just don't Sure. find it productive to keep beating the drum on that issue. And that's what led to the booing. From your perspective, how much should Republicans continue to focus on the 2020 election and whether it was quote unquote stolen?
I have had Donald Trump on two times, once before he was a politician. He was in the studio with me for an hour. He was maybe the most surprising guest in 27 years because I thought he was going to be a jerk. I thought he was going to be a pompous ass. I thought he'd come in with an entourage. I thought he'd be on his phone every commercial break. He comes in by himself. He's asking me about my family during commercials. We go to the next commercial. He goes, oh, so you said you coach basketball. Tell me about your girls. He was charming, and I really liked him. And then when I had him on my show during the 2016 campaign, he was wonderful. I cannot hate the man the way others seem to hate him because I've had such great personal interaction with him. Having said that, if he was in front of me, and if he wanted my opinion, I'd say, what are you doing? Because on every, I agree so with you on this, Brandy, on every single issue of what's going on in our economy and at our border and internationally and every issue, Trump wins over what Biden has done. And why wouldn't you just take what's happening in America right now and compare it to the way it was when Trump was president? But he can't let go. And that's a disturbing quality to me. You know, so I don't know. I've come to believe that he's not going to be the nominee in 24. I don't know that, but I think right now there's at least one person who would be stronger.
Ron DeSantis.
Yeah. Or Jay Inslee. I haven't decided yet. What one of those two?
I think he might run. I got to be honest.
Maybe. Inslee?
Oh, I think he will.
Oh, I think he's running in 24.
For president.
Yeah. We broke a thing on our show a couple months ago about how he went to Chicago and he met with this career consultant. And he's the man's at a crossroads. So. And after that sterling 2020 performance, where he almost got above zero among Democrats, I can't see why he wouldn't take another run at it. But yes, back to your question. I cannot understand why Trump won't let 2020 election go. Election, like exactly what you said, election security. Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about that. Do I believe there were 81 million people who actually voted for Joe Biden? But yes, I would.
Might
would
have
much
to disagree
rather...
on that note, but
okay, that's fine.
I mean, it could have been like 80,900,030. Maybe there were some fraudulent ballots, but
yeah, that's all I'm saying.
Okay.
But
as long as you don't boo me, we're good.
So I think on issues that people care about right now, people care about their family's budget and crime. And why in the world wouldn't you just focus on the, because nobody can, and you know, conversely, Nobody cares about what the Democrats are doing with these January 6th hearings. They can hear those hearings till they're blue in the face, and nobody cares. Nobody really cares. People, you know, manufacture their passion one way or the other. But yeah, I would just focus on what's going on with families. Your family budget and crime in your neighborhood, those are absolute rock-solid winning issues, without question.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Dory Monson, I appreciate you. I appreciate your friendship. And just always remember, you are on my first Fridays with Friends.
That's something nobody can take away from me.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Wednesday on the podcast, we talked about a study that was done by a Seattle-based nonprofit that labeled more than 800 Republicans in the United States, Republican state lawmakers, as having ties to far-right groups and far-right extremism. Pretty shocking study, right? Of course, some media outlets picked it up and talked about it. And my issue I took with it on the show on Wednesday was that several moderate, clearly moderate Republicans in Washington state somehow wound up on this list of far-right extremist Republicans. And so any rationally thinking person and any rationally thinking member of the press would wonder, okay, what could their criteria be that would land some of these lawmakers on a list that ties them to far-right groups? Certainly as a journalist, it's not something I'm just going to believe. Now, I do want to make one correction from the show on Wednesday. The House Minority Leader, the ranking Republican in the House in Olympia in Washington State, said that Representative Andrew Barkas, whose office was the subject of an attempted arson, was on this list and that his name was published on the list. And then a day or so later, the arson happened. Turned out Andrew Barkas was not on this list. That was a mistake. However, there are still several other there's 29 total lawmakers in Washington state, Republican lawmakers who landed on this list. And many of them, looking at the list, are moderate Republicans, including the House Minority Leader, J.T. Wilcox, who gets called a rhino all the time. He somehow lands on this list. So I have raised issue with this list on social media, and I reached out. Let's first just talk about the organization. So this is the homepage. When you go to the homepage of the IREHR, again, Seattle-based, so it's got the Black Lives Matter logo right there on the homepage. And it says, "We are the Institute for Research and Education on Human Rights. We fight white nationalism." Okay, so this is their stated mission. All right. Not going to think too much of it. Like, we should all fight white nationalism. That's great, right? So the name of their special report, it was called Breaching the Mainstream, a National Survey of Far-Right Membership in State Legislatures. And this thing was in depth. I mean, clearly they put a lot of work into this, but I'm going to take issue with the level of work that they indeed did. So you've got all these different chapters that lay out the introduction, the legislators on the list, profiles some of them in depth. And one of the things that becomes clear is this group, the IREHR, used membership in Facebook groups as a way to determine who they were going to put on this list of far-right lawmakers or lawmakers with ties to the far-right. And so, of course, I was wondering, okay, well, what Facebook groups might qualify someone as being right-wing? And if you go into the database where this is all listed, it shows you the Facebook group that the lawmaker belonged to, or groups in some instances, that landed them on this list of far-right lawmakers. And what you'll notice is a lot of those groups are tied to COVID mandates. Reopen Washington State. This is the name of a Facebook group that landed this particular lawmaker on this list. Reopen Washington State. The organization labeled this a COVID denial group and said it was anti-lockdown. Now think about that for a second. Being anti-lockdown is enough to have you on a list of far-right extremists. Let's keep going. Reopen the Yakima Valley. That is a group that landed this lawmaker, membership to this group, on a list of lawmakers with ties to far-right extremism. Again, if you keep going down this list, reopen Washington State, reopen the Yakima Valley, informed parents of Washington, open Spokane schools, Washington Parents' Rights in Education, Save Our Freedom Washington, reopen Washington State, reopen Spokane, open Spokane schools. And so I got myself thinking, is simple membership in groups like that really enough for this organization to deem these lawmakers fringe, right wing? I thought there's got to be more to it than that. Because if I saw a group, I was anti-lockdown, so if I saw a group called Reopen Washington State on Facebook, that's a group I might join. Now, like many Facebook groups I'm part of, I might never look at it again, but maybe I'd join it. Maybe I'd look at it occasionally. So if you had a group like that, that people were in posting fringe things or conspiracy theories about COVID, it's possible that a member of that group wouldn't even see those things. Now, there was at least one example of a Facebook group as part of this report that I thought, yeah, just the name of the group itself, by joining that, I can understand how that would land you on a list of far-right lawmakers. That particular group was called 2020 Plandemic Corona PSYOP Mind Control Anti-New World Order Vaccines 5G. Yeah, I think if you're a lawmaker and you hit to join a group that's labeled that, that's a problem, right? The name itself, joining that group, is a problem. But for groups like Unmask Washington, Unmask Our Kids Washington, Vaccine Choice for Washington State, Reopen Washington State Churches, Reopen Washington Action Network, Reopen the Yakima Valley, Reopen Spokane County, Reopen Clallam County. For you to suggest that being anti-lockdown is somehow COVID denial, conspiracist, and makes you far right, I thought, no way. This organization labeled people based on something so shallow. So I reached out to this organization and I let them know, hey, I'm very critical of this report. Do you want to come on the podcast and talk about it? And this is a response I got. Dear Brandy Cruz, thanks for reaching out and for the invitation. We wish your request had come in earlier, as all of our staff have prior obligations tomorrow. I would add that we're aware of your critiques on social media. Virtually all of your questions are answered in Breaching the Mainstream, particularly in Chapter 4, where we lay out our definitions and our very specific criteria for group inclusion. And they went on to say, I would encourage you to take a look at the entire report as it already addresses your concerns. And so I did take a look at the entire report and specifically what their criteria was for which Facebook groups would mean that a lawmaker was associated with the far right. It reads, the political right can be broadly understood as working to preserve certain traditional features of society and their related institutions. This becomes politically relevant because these traditions tend to be attached to institutionalized hierarchies variably rooted in class, race, and gender. At the very least, conservative support limiting the use of government and public institutions to address the inequality entrenched in economic and civil society institutions. So they're essentially defining far right as anyone who wants a limited government. That's what that paragraph tells me. Because if you want limited government, then you're not interested in dealing with issues related to racism or sexism. Okay, I already know we're off to a bad start here. It has several categories of Facebook groups that it deems problematic. Those categories are COVID denial, Tea Party, constitutionally constructed nationalisms, Second Amendment, far-right paramilitaries, okay, I get that one, constitutional convention advocates, political parties, okay, that's very broad, secessionist, okay, I get that one, school-centered, election-centered, anti-abortion. So being pro-life, again, in their view, makes you a far-right extremist. And then they have another group called Groups on the Christian Right. Another subset is far-right conspiracy, neo-Confederate, anti-Indian, anti-immigrant, Islamophobic, white nationalist. Now, there are some groups in there, white nationalists, you know, these anti-Indian, there's some groups in there that make sense, right? If you belong to a anti-immigrant or anti-Indian Facebook group, that's problematic if you're a lawmaker in the United States of America. But to put groups like that side by side with a group that is, let's say, pro-choice, pro-school choice, or anti-lockdown shows you the inherent flaws in this study. But let's focus in for a moment on COVID denial. Okay, what do they deem a COVID denial Facebook group? According to the report, IREHR divided such groups into seven major categories: anti-mask, anti-mandate, hoaxer, reopen, anti-vax, multidimensional, and anti-lockdown. So again, based on their stated criteria, if you are anti-mask, if you are anti-vaccine mandate, which I think accounts for like almost half of Washingtonians, if you are anti-vaccine, like you just don't want a vaccine, you join a Facebook group in that regard, you might be considered by this Seattle-based organization to be part of the far right, to be a far right extremist. And again, I go back to this organization's own definition of defining the far right. They write, "The far right can be understood as groups and individuals advocating changes in the organizational structure of the state or public policies that would significantly undermine political, social, or economic equality along such lines as class, race, gender, sexual orientation, national origin, immigration status, and religion. This can encompass groups and individuals who aim to significantly undermine the capacity of government to address broad issues of public health and safety, workplace safety, environmental protection, and environmental justice, and other critical public goods." Those last two words there, that's important to understand. What this organization deems as critical public goods is going to be much different than what other people might consider a public good. So what this entire report seeks to do is to label people as extremists if they do not fall within this organization's definition of politics for the public good. It has nothing to do with whether the lawmakers are actually right-wing extremists. Now, are there a few on the list who are incredibly problematic? Of course, and I mentioned earlier, if you're part of some like neo-Nazi group, that's kind of a no-brainer. But when you have lawmakers who belong to Facebook groups about reopening the state, Facebook groups about not wanting to wear a mask, Facebook groups about wanting to reopen schools, all of a sudden you're right-wing. You're on a hit list of far-right lawmakers. And that is wrong. So you have an organization that claims it is about fighting extremism, if the extremists are white. Yet they are putting something out there in a heated political climate that could very well inspire extremism on the other end of the spectrum. And for that reason, they should be ashamed of themselves. Today, we're launching another reoccurring Friday segment on Undivided. You know, people watching and listening live in Washington State. I was a mainstream journalist in Seattle for 10 years, and so I think that's kind of where the base of viewers are. And that's good, but I think sometimes Washington stories over and over can get a little mundane. And so I thought, what other state would be interesting? And Florida came to mind, because I just don't know if there's another state that is more different from Washington than the state of Florida. So today we are launching a segment called Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Introducing our Florida-based correspondent, Miranda. First name Miranda, last name Cruz. It's my sister.
It's me.
It's you. So you're in, can we say Miami area?
Yes, I live in Miami, but the smaller area that I live in is called Coral Gables.
Okay, don't give out your exact address. You're pretty. People will come find you. So we decided to do this because, well, people don't know this, but you've been helping with the show since like the very beginning, since I quit my job. You were a big cheerleader. But also, we talk about politics all the time, and we have a bunch of fun talking about politics. So I thought there's no state that's more different than Washington, I would argue, than Florida is. Maybe Texas, but opposite ends of the country, opposite politically. And so every Friday, we're going to do Florida Report with you. What do you got for us from Florida today? Some Ron DeSantis?
Yeah, so our first article is from the New York Times. The headline says, 49 states pre-order vaccine doses for very young children. Florida did not. The article goes on to say, Florida did not pre-order any doses of coronavirus vaccines for very young children from the federal government, state officials said Thursday, arguing that the state had no need to be involved in what they called a convoluted vaccine distribution process.
Just for, I knew you were talking about this, and so I asked our Washington State Department of Health just for some juxtaposition. I said, hey, how many vaccines did you pre-order? They ordered 173,000 doses for ages 6 months to 4 to 5 years. So Florida ordered none. I mean, I'm assuming they're just going to rely on like the private healthcare system to get doses and give them to people then.
And that's kind of what it seems to say. Like in the article, it talks about how CVS said that they're going to go ahead and order from the federal government as they can and as they have before. I don't know. It kind of bothers me. I'm not like a super pro-vaccine, but I'm also like, it just makes it a little more difficult for people who like, for whatever reason, want to vaccinate their children. And I just think that's kind of, what do you call it? Performative politics in a way, but this actually affects people.
Yeah, he's been a little bit performative. I mean, I guess I would wait and see, like, does CVS and all these places have a hard time getting the vaccines? Like, did they try to pre-order them, or now do they have to go about and get them? Because, like you know, I've been against vaccine mandates, but I also think if you want to get a vaccine, you should be able to get one easily. So yeah, DeSantis has been doing some performative things, but Do people there like him?
Yeah, they actually do. I think COVID had a big deal with changing people around. I wasn't on board with DeSantis when he was elected, but he did a couple of things at the very beginning of his term as governor that were very environmentally friendly. And I'm a big environmental person. I care a lot about nature, and I just think Florida's a beautiful place. And when anybody does anything to protect that beauty, I can't help but to give him a little round of applause. But in general, I think that his fight for like freedom and liberty, as far as wearing masks and all that stuff during COVID, kind of got a lot of people on board with him, because we did turn out to be the quote unquote free state. And he had a lot to do with that. So
I describe you as like a kind of bougie hippie libertarian. Is that fair?
No, that's about right. That's perfect.
We used to be really far apart on politics, but I feel like our politics are morphing into each other a little bit, where we just kind of want to be left alone.
Yeah. You know, and the older I get, I realize like even people that sit pretty far on the ends, we all kind of want the same things. We just have different insane roads to get there. You know, which is why I've enjoyed listening to your show a lot, because I think it just it tries to help get people back on the same highway together. Because at the end of the day, we're usually all going the same places. So.
Well, you have to like my show. You're my sister. Speaking of the environment, I think you've got another Ron DeSantis for us involving kind of the environment.
Yes, we do. This does involve the environment, because invasive species have a huge impact on, you know, the local population of animals and insects and plants. This one's out of the Miami Herald. It says Burmese python hunt in Florida Everglades is slated for August. Flanked by a huge writhing snake, Governor DeSantis announced on Thursday that the annual prize-winning hunt for invasive Burmese pythons in the Florida Everglades will begin August 5th. And it's about a 10-day hunt where people from all over the country come in and try to bring down the numbers of giant snakes that live in our area.
Okay, writhing snake. Did you call it withering?
Oh, I thought it said writhing.
Writhing. I looked at a picture of this thing and we saw a picture of it and I was like, oh, he's a big boy. And you're like, it's a girl.
It is a female. I did read that it's a female.
Good for him for holding the snake. I wonder if Washington Governor Jay Inslee would hold a snake that big. Okay, the next story you have is, to me, just, it could happen in no other state. Hit me with it.
Yes. I love how these are progressively like hitting each point of the news, like politics and environment. And now we got just people stuff. ClickOrlando.com says, drunken woman on motorized suitcase leads police chase through Orlando airport. An intoxicated passenger who was barred from boarding an airplane at Orlando International Airport rode away from the gate on a motorized suitcase as a police officer on a bicycle followed behind her, court records, and a newly released video show. So we have video evidence of this.
I'm watching it right now.
I'm just trying to go home and enjoy myself. I'm trying to go home.
See that?
But I've been here for hours.
That's yeah, it happens.
I was drinking. I've been here for hours.
Yeah, bad weather. Gotta do something, right?
The cop's being really nice to her.
I mean, how could you not be?
Unfortunately, it's their policy. You just can't be that intoxicated when you fly in a plane, okay?
I'm not that intoxicated.
We need you to go to the terminal,
Suck my
Okay, Chelsea. Just go to the terminal. Okay. I'll help see her out. You guys are good. Oh, man, that thing kind of goes fast.
Oh, my God.
I'm gonna have a bike pursuing a suitcase in a minute. Chelsea, can you do me a favor? Can you roll with me to the main terminal? You can't hang out here. It's a secured area.
Is Florida like... Do you think that crazier things actually do happen in Florida? Or is it just kind of a joke in the media and so now we look for crazy things?
I think crazy things happen everywhere, but I do think they happen here at like a higher rate.
Why?
It might have something to do with the sunshine, to be honest. Like, I feel like it just always kind of has people in this heightened state of just like not like feeling like they're on vacation or just like not really caring. Cause I'm guilty of it from time to time too. I've never rode away from a cop on a motorized suitcase, but like, you know, like, I don't know. Like, it has this, I think it's just this weird sense of neverlandness in Florida where people don't think like rules apply.
And to be fair, you're a little weird.
Yeah, I think I belong down here.
How was your first time acting as a reporter?
Oh, actually not so bad.
Pretty easy.
We have funny conversations like this all the time. So, you know, it'll be nice to share this with some of your followers.
Well, and also it's actually not your first time reporting. You flew up here specifically to go photograph Chaz Chop.
I did. I don't know why now when I'm thinking in hindsight, but I'm also, you know, I'm a photographer. So any opportunity to photograph the real world is something that me and most photographers would jump at, to be honest. And Chop was a pretty interesting opportunity, I should say, to get in and just see Seattle at its rawest.
At its most raw.
That is awesome. I know.
You were brave. That was after my crew got mobbed. So my boyfriend and I, we just dropped you straight off. I'm like, I'm not going in. He's like, I'm not going in. And yeah, a few blocks away and then came back to get you. And you were like, what just happened? What did I just
see? It was pretty intense.
All right. It was pretty intense. Well, with Florida Report, my sister, Miranda Cruz, thank you.
You're so welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
That's it for this episode of the Undivided Podcast. If you're not a subscriber, remember, you get an exclusive episode just like this every single Wednesday. You can become a subscriber for as little as $5 a month. So that's about 4 exclusive episodes a month. I think that's a pretty good deal. So if you'd like to join this movement to give common sense a comeback, you can do that in 2 ways. At patreon.com/undivided or by becoming a contributor on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. And if you join on Locals now, we're doing 3 months free with a year membership. So it's a really great deal to be able to sign up and get some exclusive content. So as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com.